Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on PBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Also, buy the Rockstar Chronicles Series 1, my new book, available at bookbaby.com and amazon.com, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know. In a career that has already spanned a half century, Jorma Kekkonen has been one of the most highly respected interpreters of American roots, music, blues, and rock. Member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and a Grammy recipient, Jorma was at the forefront of popular rock and roll, one of the founders of the San Francisco Sound and a progenitor of psychedelic rock. He is a founding member of two legendary bands, Jefferson Airplane and still touring Hot Tuna. Jorma is a music legend and one of the finest singer-songwriters in his field. He continues to tour the world, bringing his unique style to old blues tunes while presenting new songs of weight and dimension. His secret is in playing spontaneous and unfiltered music with an individual expression of personality. In 2016, Jorma, Jack Cassidy, and the other members of Jefferson Airplane were awarded the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award for their contributions to American music. A pioneer of counterculture-era psychedelic rock, the Jefferson Airplane was the first band from the San Francisco scene to achieve international mainstream success. Their 1967 record, Surrealistic Pillow, is regarded as one of the key recordings of the Summer of Love. Jorma and Jack would jam whenever they could and would sometimes perform sets within sets of Airplane concerts. The two would often play clubs following Airplane performances, making a name for themselves as a duo. They struck a record deal and Hot Tuna was born. Jorma left Jefferson Airplane after the band's most productive 5 years, pursuing his full-time job with Hot Tuna. Over the past 5 decades, Hot Tuna has performed thousands of concerts and released more than 24 records. The musicians who have performed with them are many and widely varied, as are their styles, from acoustic to long and loud electric jams, but never straying far from the musical roots. What is remarkable is that they have never coasted. Hot Tuna today sounds better than ever. Please welcome legendary blues, folk, and rock guitarist, internationally known for being a member of the Jefferson Airplane and Hot Tuna, Jorma Kekkonen. Hello, Jorma.
Hey, man, wow. Do I have a good publicist or what? It sounds like an allergy.
I'm telling you, man, when artists belong to so many bands, you know, it's hard to get it all in, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's just, I mean, all that stuff is true, you know, in its own universe. But when you hear it back to back, it's like, holy, come on, enough already. But anyway, thanks, I appreciate it, and it's good to be here.
Let me tell you, man, first of all, I just wanted to let you know you're an incredible guitar player. You know, I love your acoustic, stuff, but your electric guitar work over the years has been phenomenal.
Well, thanks, man. Well, you know, I was talking to somebody about it the other day, and, you know, when I got in the Jefferson Airplane, I'd never really played in the band before. You know, what Jack and I did in high school, yeah, we had a high school band, but that doesn't really count. We weren't even a garage band. My grandfather's car was in a garage. We were a living room band, you know. And so, but when I the Jefferson airplane, I didn't bring any. I really didn't know what the heck I was doing, so I got to learn on. I got to learn on the job, and certainly I've been inspired by lots of people, and that's a book unto itself. But as a result of me not knowing anything, I wound up sounding like myself. You know something? That's okay.
That's okay. I want to talk about the airplane in Hot Tuna, of course, but I want to bring up Fur Piece Ranch Guitar Camp,
sure,
which is fascinating. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So I looked in it. I looked in 126 acres of really beautiful country in southeast Ohio. Now, you know, I've been here for almost 30 years now, but a lot of people think about Ohio. They think about the Cuyahoga River burning 40 years ago. They think about flat corn. They think about all this stuff. But Ohio is sort of a maligned state, and in the same way that I consider New Jersey to be a maligned state sometimes.
Right.
I mean, there's just really beautiful areas in it, and southeast Ohio is one of them. Anyway, so we wound up with this beautiful piece of property, and, you know, we just started to think about, because I've been teaching off and on for decades, I always really enjoyed it, and we thought, well, what are we going to do with this thing? And we thought, you know, well, maybe we'll start a guitar school or something. Now, you know, in these days, if somebody has a bright idea like that, the first thing they do is create a website. Now, in those days, we couldn't even spell computer, so the first thing we did was print T-shirts and business cards.
Mm-hmm.
And those existed probably for the first, you know, 7 years that I lived down here in southeast Ohio.
Right.
In any case, so in 97 or thereabouts, we decided we're going to do this thing, you know. So we built what we thought would be just like a sort of like a music school kind of thing, which it is, but it turned out to be something else. Now, a lot of the stuff I think that happens at the Fur Piece Ranch sounds sappy, so we'll just talk about the stuff that's easy to talk about. We, you know, obviously, you know, we're not doing anything really right now because of the pandemic, but in a perfect world, we have great instructors, we have a beautiful environment where people just like, we all did the same kind of stuff, we have great food, et cetera, you know, and that makes for a nice way to foster a community of like-minded spirits. And that's what's kind of hard to talk about without sounding sappy, but
right,
it really does happen, you know. I mean, if you talk to anybody who's been to the Fur Piece Ranch, they'll talk about the friends they made,
mm-hmm,
bands they might have formed, relationships, music they shared, all this kind of stuff, you know. So anyway, so we've been there for, excuse me, for 22 or 23, I forget. My higher math is not that great, but in any case, we're still here. Now, obviously, with the pandemic, I'm doing a lot of stuff online, but tomorrow we're doing our first thing that involves the public since everybody got shut down.
Right.
Because we have a little restaurant. We're doing like a takeout sandwich shop.
Oh, cool.
And I'm going to be playing on the porch of one of our buildings for a couple hours. So in any case, like, you know, so we wound up with this thing. I mean, I wish that I could show you what it looks like, because I look at it myself and I go, I can't believe we built this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the landscaping, the buildings, the vibe, I mean, all this kind of stuff. It's just like, for a guy like me, it's like, it's a dream come true, it really is.
Well, you've been doing the quarantine concerts. I've been watching those. They're wonderful, by the way.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Yeah, that's the thing also, though.
Yeah.
Obviously, our shows got shut down and this and that, but we figured we've got a video production thing here. We've got internet. We've got me. We've got John and Myron and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Why shouldn't we? So we're doing another one this weekend.
Now, I'm a guitar player, but there's a lot of things I need to still know. You know, I'm not one of those guys who can, you know, convert music, you know, into my head, into my
right,
fingers and play the guitar. That's
sure,
a gift. That's a gift. Guys can, you know, like you can do that.
That might be debatable. I mean, you know, I'm not being disingenuous when I say I consider myself an intermediate level guitar player with a lot of experience. I mean, I'm not one of these chops heads and stuff like that.
Right.
But I've spent a lifetime with the music that I love, and I've come to really understand it, you know. So I look at myself as a musical storyteller, and I've gotten pretty good at that. I'm not a quick learner.
Mm-hmm.
When I have to learn a song, I need to woodshed until whoever I'm practicing with hates the song.
Right. Now, Do you make reservations to be at the camp, or how does that work?
Okay, so it's an on. Do you mean to take courses and stuff like that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. So there's an online process. We try to keep. After the financial crash in 08, we had to back off. We were doing 4 and 5 instructors for each session. Now we really only do 2. We keep it down to like 10 people in each class. And so people just need to go online to the Perpich Ranch site and submit an application. And, if they're lucky, they'll get in.
Right.
Now we have an over 90%, recidivist. Return student, rate. Hey, if you're ever up here, if for some reason, we're not a waypoint, we're a destination, but if for some reason you're driving north to see somebody in upstate New York or something like that, you gotta stop by, I'll show you around.
Oh, I'm fascinated by it, I would love to be. How long is it? Say I make reservations, I'm accepted, how long would I be there?
It's Friday morning through Monday morning.
Okay.
Now, the first year we were open, we had no idea what we were doing. So
right.
We had like five and 6 day weeks. And first of all, it just didn't work. And for a lot of reasons. And not the least of which is how many people can take off a week in the middle of the year and have a work year to do something like that. So,
right. So
we found from a teaching point of view and from the ability of people to actually take some time to get away, That Friday through Monday really does the trick.
I mean, this is awesome. How many teachers do you have on staff?
Well, I guess the only one that's really on staff is me because I live at the ranch. But
right.
But we rotate teachers and stuff like that all the time. I mean, I'm not complaining about. I'm not going to complain about my life with this pandemic because I'm blessed. I live in a rural area.
Yeah.
The COVID-19 rate is very low where I live. I live 20 miles from town, so I'm sort of socially distant anyway, But we had a great year planned.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know. You can make plans, but you can't plan the outcome. So we had to cancel all the concerts and this and that. But, the good news is that the people that we work with and the teachers that didn't get to teach here this year, we've rescheduled everything for next year. So hopefully everything's going to be okay. But in any case, to answer your question, the only real, staff person that teaches is me and my friend John Hurlbutt, that's our ranch manager, because he teaches also. Other than that, each week has one and sometimes 2 guest professors.
Yeah, I saw you have a performance hall. And I was looking at the schedule. You had Wishbone Ash there. You had some great performers there.
Yeah, well, we've got Wishbone Ash rescheduled. We're still going to get him. And then, funny you should mention him, too. I mean, Wishbone Ash, if somebody was going to ask me, because we had Wishbone Ash, I forget, last year, sometime within the last couple of years, are you going to jam with him? I go, listen, Wishbone Ash stuff is very, you don't just casually jam with Wishbone Ash. You got to know all those songs. So in any case, yeah. The guys are great. We got them coming back again, and they do the songs.
Great band. Great band.
Yeah, man.
I want to congratulate you on your book as well.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's an autobiography. It's called Been So Long, My Life in Music. And, I guess is the title also written to express his life both in out of the music world. That's the whole title. But it sounds like a great book. I'm going to buy it. I've got a book out too as well that I did interviews with over 45 legends.
I heard that in your interest book.
Yep.
That's cool stuff, man.
And with your permission, we'll talk later, but I'd like to put you in series 2 because I want to do at least 4 series.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You got it.
You'll be joined by very good company, I promise you.
No, I'm sure. But one of the things that's so interesting really is, the artistic field is always a fertile field anyway,
right,
whether you do or don't like all the stuff that's going on. But, the music business, excuse me, the quote-unquote popular music business has just been so rich in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how can this continue? But it does.
Exactly. Well, you've been blessed, to play with several of, legendary bands. Congratulations on 50 years with Hot Tuna, by the way.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
50 years. Can you believe that?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole Jefferson airplane thing, I mean, look, I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world for a lot of reasons, but not the least of which is that as a reasonably talented young fingerstyle guitar player, I completely stepped in shit when I got in that band. I mean, who knew what was going to happen, you know?
Right.
And I learned so much. You know, the Jefferson Airplane, you know, it's a rock and roll band, but it's a very atypical rock and roll band. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. It's based unto itself. And as a result of the great singers and songwriters we had in the band, I learned to play a lot of stuff that I wouldn't have learned how to play if I'd, you know, been in a blues band or something like that. And I'm not critical of blues bands, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, your acoustic work's incredible, but yeah, I love your psychedelic work. I'm a big psychedelic rock fan from way back, you know, and, you know, anytime I hear psychedelic guitar, I just melt.
Yeah. I'm fond of it myself, obviously. Well, so you'll dig this. So John Hurlbut, who's our ranch manager, I just, you know, while we've been stuck away here, Johnny and I have been playing off and on for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, because we have a little restaurant so part of the time. We play for the Supper Crew. And so when I play with him, I get to do pretty much what I used to do with the airplane. You know, I mean, I'm not playing my songs, and so I'm completely free to just be a lead guitar player. Now, we haven't been playing electrically. We've been playing acoustically, so,
right,
you know, we don't have a lot of psychedelic palette. The musical colors that you have when you're playing electric guitar. But for the point of view of me approaching leads and stuff like that, it was like being back in the airplane again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my favorite albums from Hot Tuna is American Choice, Yellow Fever, and is it Hopkorv? Is that how you pronounce it?
Hopkorv, yeah.
Hopkorv,
right.
Yeah. And of course, those are the electric years,
right,
of Hot Tuna.
Yeah, right. And,
yeah,
you know, I was thinking about that because I've been, like, dredging up old songs I've played in decades for our quarantine concert stuff. And so I've actually, I normally don't listen to myself, but I've been going back. And I remember there was a lot of pressure to constantly be writing and recording. And so we cranked out a lot of albums in a short period of time.
You sure did.
I was just looking at this song from America's Choice, Great
right.
Divide Revisited, yesterday, which I'm getting ready to revive again.
Good.
And it's not a lightly undertaken song. I mean, I'm going, did I write this thing?
But the album was incredible. I've got a lot of memories from that album as well. My favorite songs are Hit Single Number One and Serpent of Dreams.
That's a good one.
Serpent of Dreams is incredible, man. What a song.
Oh, thanks, man.
Oh, my
thanks.
God.
So, you remember Don Kirshner's rock concert?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I used to watch it all the time.
Yeah, of course we did. Well, we were on it a couple times.
Yep.
In that case, when I wrote, before Hit Single Number One had lyrics, we played it on a Don Kirshner's rock concert, sort of as an instrumental thing. And they used it, and they used parts of it as like a sort of an intro to the show very briefly.
Right.
But at that moment, I was convinced that it was going to be my first hit single, and that's why I called it that.
Well,
it didn't quite work out that way, but it's okay. It's still a great song. We play it all
great
the time.
Great song. It's a fantastic song. That's why, you know, when you come around in concert and it's the acoustic set, you know, I'm saying, oh, when are they going to do the electric set?
I hear you.
Oh, and I hear America's Choice. And then, of course, Yellow Fever, which, you know, incredible guitar work, you know, and Baby, What You Want Me to Do,
right.
Song for the Fire Maiden.
Well, if there's any upside, you know, for me, with me spending all this time at home,
yeah.
And by the way, you know, in a normal world, I'd be a great grandfather, but I've got a teenage daughter in this one.
Uh-huh.
And my wife and my daughter and I still like each other. That's a good thing.
That's important.
I'm never home this much. But anyway, yeah, so as a result, I've been going through all this stuff and relearning all these old songs, which means that when we come back out on the road electric again, we'll have a bunch of new
good.
Old songs.
Good, good, good. And also songs from the Stainless Symbol. That's another favorite.
Yep.
Incredible guitar work, man. Incredible guitar work.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
So go Hot Tuna Electric.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, again, I love it all. I love playing acoustic guitar because they're easier to carry around, but there's just something utterly seductive about playing electric rock and roll. And with Hot Tuna, the amp that I'm, that I, you know, I use two guitars. I use that Jed Atkins for the finger picking stuff.
Right,
and,
right.
And I've been using a Firebird most of the time. Sometimes a Les Paul for the, you know, for the string bending stuff. But the amp that I'm using for the Firebird is a 1967 Marshall 50 watt Plexi.
Oh,
it's
wow.
The shit.
Wow. Unreal.
Can I say that? Can I use that word?
Oh right yeah, now? You can say anything you want on this program.
Yeah, man.
You know, I was fortunate to chat with Paul Kattner before he passed away.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Peace, yeah.
Really cool guy. You
he
know,
was.
I didn't know he was such a space buff, you know, and sci-fi buff, but
completely.
Yeah, and they played Roswell. I think we were promoting the album that they did over there in Roswell, and such a nice guy. We were talking about Woodstock.
He was.
We were talking about Woodstock, and I've interviewed a lot of guys that were at Woodstock: Greg Raleigh and Johnny Winter and Henry McCullough before he passed away, and a lot of other guys. But he was so funny. He was talking about. He said, "I had the best time. I got plastered when the stage started to slip a little. I'm starting there, sitting there on the stage, and Chip Monk, who's running everything, says, 'We've got to get everyone off the stage. It's slipping a little.' And I looked up at him and said, 'I can't move.'" He said he was so out of it, I guess, sitting there on the stage, he couldn't get up.
Good times.
Yeah,
you talk about Woodstock, and you know, obviously, I'll never be a part of something like that again. And it was unbelievable on so many levels. You don't need me to reprise that. But if any of us got an outdoor gig like Woodstock today, we'd go, "This gig sucks. I'm never going to work here again."
No. And it was a messy, messy show, right? Because of the rain. It was pretty muddy.
Oh,
and
God.
Stuff, right?
It was messy. And they the people take catering for granted now. There was no catering.
I know.
I think there's like one porta potty backstage. Speaking of slipping, but let's not go there.
Did you guys come in on helicopter or did you drive in?
No. We're the working man's band.
Yeah.
We came in and rented station wagons, as I recall, and we drove in early, so we were actually able to drive in.
Right.
And and on the way out, because we left after we did our set, we had to go down to do that TV show with
Dick Cavett. Dick Cavett show.
Pardon?
The Dick Cavett show.
Thank you. That brain fart for me. Yeah. Yeah. In any case, I got a flat tire on the rental car, and we drove into Manhattan on the Rim.
Oh, really? Wow.
Hey, got to get to the gig, man.
Yeah, exactly. One way or another.
One way or another.
Did you guys stick around? I don't know if he told me that. Did you stick around afterwards to see Sly and the Family Stone? I don't know.
You want to know something? I honestly do not remember. The thing that I do remember is seeing Santana. I know the Who played and we saw that, but I've seen the Who before. But
yeah.
And they were always awesome. But that show was Carlos Santana's. You know, I've seen Carlos play in like blues bands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'd never seen his thing before.
Right.
I still remember that this you know, half a century later, I remember that as being one of the great live shows for me of all time.
Oh yeah.
Perhaps right up there with the first time I saw Cream at the Fillmore.
Right. Yeah, I saw Santana. I don't know five times. I had his wife on. Cindy Blackman, Santana. She was cool. She was really cool. And I had Greg Raleigh on as well. Another nice guy.
Yeah,
really
cool.
Nice guy.
Awesome.
Yeah. One of the songs you did that you wrote several tunes, Star Trek, Turn My Life Down on Volunteers,
right.
Feel So Good from Bark, Trial by Fire, Too Many Years. But one of the ones that really sticks out is Embryonic Journey, which was a really cool song. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No. Talk about that tune.
Absolutely. So I wrote that tune probably in 63, maybe.
Wow, really?
It was way before the airplane. But in any case, so I remember, you know, we were... the first Airplane album, Takes Off, is a folk rock album. Seriously, Phil is a rock and roll album.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's sort of like a transitory rock and roll album into the more psychedelic stuff like that, just my opinion. But anyway, or something. I was sitting out in the lobby at the RCA Studios in L.A. at the corner of Sunset and Ivor, and I was playing my old J50, and I played that song, and Rick Gerard, who was the producer of that record, walked by and went, "Well, what is that thing?" And I went, just something I wrote a couple of years ago, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, "I want that on the, I want you to cut a track for that on the album." And I went, "Oh, come on." I thought it was the stupidest idea I'd ever heard. So, actually, the guy was a genius. I mean, thank God he put that on it, you know. In any case, that's probably a first take, a second take max.
Right.
And in those days, you know, we didn't have Dolby and noise reduction and all that kind of
exactly,
stuff. So you have to get it. And so the echo, because the echo is actual room echo and stuff like that. I mean, I listen to that stuff just drenched in room reverb.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, man, that sounds great. I wish my guitar sounded like that all the time.
Yeah. Great, too. And it ends up in a Friends episode, right? The last episode.
Yeah, that's hilarious, you know. I never really watched Friends, but, you know, and they had four or five songs were up for that last episode. So I remember the last episode of Friends was a two-hour thing. There was like an hour retrospective in the final episode.
Exactly.
So I watched the 2 hours waiting to see the song. And it got to the top of the hour at the end of the final episode. I'm going, well, I guess they didn't use it. And it ran 8 minutes over, and they used it. I went, wow. So the funny thing about that is one of my buddies, whose teenage daughters at that time, thought the dad was just such a fruddy-duddy and his taste in music sucked. But they were big Friends fans. So when they heard that, they went, wow, Dad, we really get what you like in music. We love this music.
That's what it takes, you know. You got to be in a Friends episode.
Yeah. And whatever it takes, man. It's tough to win the kids over.
I know, it is, especially today.
You know, like my daughter says to me, well, Dad, you know it's not my kind of music, but you're very good at it.
Well, luckily, I got my daughter, you know, and my son, both of them, I taught them right. They like all the same music I do.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, one of the good things about my daughter is that she likes, I mean, she likes music that I wouldn't get turned on to otherwise.
Right.
But she's got good taste in music.
Good. You know? That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I listen to a lot of stuff that I don't get to listen to. That's pretty cool stuff.
Well, you know, I really got into a lot of my daughter's music back in the 90s, you know, when Nirvana came out and Pearl Jam and all that. To me, that era was probably the last era that had any kind of music resembling rock and roll, you know?
Yeah, man, that's funny you mentioned. I've got a 23-year-old son also, and he was into Nirvana, you know, back then. And he turned me on to that Nirvana, that live acoustic record.
Right, right.
And I got it. When I listened to that, I got it. I went, yeah, okay. And then I went in and got it. And then I overcame my stupid prejudice and went, they're a cool band. They were a cool band. I got it, too. I agree with you.
I was a big Chris Cornell fan in Soundgarden, too. They were a good band.
Yeah, sure.
Really
liked
them a lot.
You're right about that. There's some good rock and roll stuff there.
Yeah, but that was it. That was the last of it, I think. You know, the grunge period. And, you know, after that, yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, most of the stuff today... I mean, you know, I tend not to really immerse myself in what people say. Well, what do you like in rock and roll?
Yeah.
I don't really listen to modern rock and roll. But as, you know, generally speaking, my impression is just the music is not as guitar centric now as
exactly.
it once was.
Exactly.
And I like the guitar, so if it's not guitar centric, unless it's a really good song, I'm not going to listen to it.
Yeah, and they're not band oriented anymore. You don't see too many bands, you know?
Right.
I like progressive rock, and there is some good progressive rock bands out there, you know, with that intricate
sure
type music.
Are.
Yeah.
And maybe the guys, you know, I use the term loosely. You know, the kids are playing better than ever before. I mean, there's some great musicians out there, you know. So you bet there's some good progressive rock stuff.
Oh, there's some girls out there on YouTube that wail on the guitar, man. I'm really shocked.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really shocked. Let's talk about the inception of White Rabbit. How did that all come about? I heard that it was kind of the Alice in Wonderland thing plus Ravel's Bolero. Is that true? Kind of a mixture?
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, you know, Grace, it's really funny because the two songs that really are responsible for getting us into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Somebody's Love and White Rabbit,
right.
were not written by Jefferson Airplane people, Great Pearl White Rabbit, of course, and Somebody's Love was written by her brother-in-law, and they were songs that she did with the Great Society, the band that she was in before us.
Right.
So when they brought those songs, I really forget how it transited into what White Rabbit became, but when the Great Society did it, it was really an excuse for like freak out horn instrumentals and all this kind of stuff. But Jack, you know, God bless him, you know, that, I mean, there's no question that if we had Jack, you know, I would hesitate to speak for Jack. But yeah, Ravel's Bolero, no question that it was an inspiration to him, but I mean, that bass part is awesome. And I'll tell you a funny thing about the guitar part also. I hadn't played the song in years, but in 2015, we got together with Rachel Price and some of our other friends and did a tribute at Lachlan to ourselves. The Airplane did all those songs. So I kind of BS'd my way through the White Rabbit intro.
Yep.
But then I got involved in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing, and I got to thinking, I said, you know, it really is an iconic little thing. I need to learn it again.
Exactly.
So you're going to love this. So I downloaded it from iTunes for 99 cents, sat on my little stage here at the ranch and taught myself my own solo.
That's funny. Well, you know, if you don't play for a while, it happens. It happened to Jimmy Page when he came back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. If you don't use it, you lose it, you know.
Exactly right.
I know. Believe me.
But, you know, that psychedelic lick you do on that song is probably one of the greatest of all time as far as psychedelic tracks, you know?
You know, the thing about it also, when I got back into it, you know, over the last, you know, 50 plus years, I've learned a lot more about music. I could never create a solo like that today in a million years because I know so much more about quote unquote the rules today than I used to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the positions and the stuff. I mean, like I said, when I went back in and learned it, and by the way, I've kept up on it in case I may have to play it again. I just don't think like that. I wouldn't think about something like that. You know? So there you go.
Do you play any Airplane stuff when you do the Hot Tuna Electric? Or
well, let's see. Well, we did Trial by Fire, of course.
Right.
You know, the thing about the Airplane stuff is, I mean, any of the things that I recorded with the Airplane, occasionally we do Feel So Good.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, stuff like that. You know, without our great singers, Grace, Marty, and Paul.
Right.
You know, that's not me. I just can't do that. Man, like when we did that thing at Lachlan where we had Rachel Price doing some great stuff and Teresa Williams, Larry Campbell's wife, doing some great other stuff, that's different. You know, because those girls can sing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I said, I'm a storyteller, not a singer. You need somebody like Marty or Grace or even Paul to do that kind of stuff.
Did you talk to Paul about Evangelist and especially what's his name? The guy today. He used to make fun of him, and then he became friends with him.
Oh yeah, he used to. What was his name? Yeah, I remember. Right.
Yeah,
I remember. Paul used to have this little, you know, towards when we did some stuff. Me and Jack did some acoustic stuff with Paul, and then at the Airplane reunion in '89. He had this little altar thing on stage where he had all kinds of, I can't think of the guy's name.
Is it Jim Baker? Jim Baker, right? Tammy Lee?
You know something? Yeah, I remember Jim and Tammy Faye.
Right.
It could have been Jim Baker.
I think it was Jim Baker, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff.
That's funny.
Yeah, Paul. Yeah, it's really funny, yeah.
He was telling me, you know, that he would ask him if he was ever going to retire, and he says that he'd probably die on stage. And his big thing, there was, I think near San Francisco, there's this little coffee shop or something that he used to hang out, and that was like his big thing.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, and he used to read a lot. He loved to read.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's up in North Beach, yeah.
Yeah. I had fun talking to him. He was a, you know, down-to-earth guy.
He was a good guy. He really was a good guy. You know, one of the things that I'm really grateful for, because a lot of times with friends, you let them slip away and you wonder what happened to them.
Right.
Paul and I reconnected again about a year or so before he passed, and we had dinner together a bunch of times. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, your life's take a lot of directions. But at the end of the day, when you get together with old friends, they know who you are and where you came from.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I was sad about Marty, too. I was shocked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marty, I mean, that was tragic, too. You know, there's some botched surgery with him, and man, I'll tell you what, I mean, it's always not me to say that he's in a better place. But if it was me, I'd want to be in that place.
Yeah, I understand. Crazy stuff going on these days. Man, 2020 just sucks.
Yeah, well,
you know,
look at this way. It's like that Winona Judd song. When you hit rock bottom, the only way to go is up.
Well, let me tell you, your latest album, it Ain't No Hurry. Okay, I gave it 5 stars. I loved it.
Oh, bless you.
And you got a lot of cool songs that you can identify with kind of today. They're kind of, you know, ain't in no hurry. When there's two, there's trouble. Two, there's trouble. The terrible operation we were just talking about.
Yeah, I love that song.
That's a crazy song, huh?
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Oh, man. Where there's two, there's trouble reminded me a lot of Leon Russell for some reason.
Yeah, a little bit. I never thought about it, but I can hear that. So my buddy Michael Falzarano wrote that song, and the words speak for themselves, you know. There's no question about it, but where I think he got inspired is the guy that wrote The Terrible Operation.
Right.
his name was Thomas Dorsey.
Uh-huh.
But he became the Reverend Thomas A. Dorsey. He's the father of modern gospel music. But back in the day, he did all these like quasi-dirty songs. Well, in any case, so there was a movie that came out in the 80s that was about gospel music in Chicago. Reverend Dorsey was still alive at that time. And so they're just filming all this stuff, and they're talking, and one of the gals that used to sing with him before he became ordained is sort of like bad vibing his current wife and stuff like that. I mean, there's one of these things, and he goes, he shakes his head, and he goes, "Where there's two, there's trouble." And everybody in the amen corner goes, "Amen, amen, amen." You know,
cool.
Like, you know, yeah. Where there's two, there's trouble. Words to live by, kids. Take heed.
Awesome. Awesome. I love the album. It's great.
Well, thanks, man.
Suffer Little Children to Come On to Me. That one could be electric, couldn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because Jack's coming out to visit me in July.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, something I hadn't thought about that, but that you're absolutely right. That's a great idea for an electric song. Yeah, great story on that. Nora Guthrie and one of her daughters, Anna, that are sort of like the guardians of the Guthrie legacy. You know?
Right, right.
We become friends over the years and stuff like that. So when I was doing that album, I go, "Look, I would love to do a Woody song." Got any ideas? And anyway, they had a whole bunch of these poems that Woody had written that were never set to music. And so Larry and I created the music for that song. In any case, they emailed me like facsimiles of his original, you know, the stuff on like yellow lined paper in his own handwriting and stuff like that. It was so cool.
It's a great song. Great song. And you know what? Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? That's very kind of a old time type song, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime was written, the lyrics were written by Yip Harburg,
uh-huh,
who also wrote Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So,
really?
If you think about Brother, Can You Spare the Dime, was sort of like the beginning of the Depression era.
Right, right.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow was the end, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's just such a great song anyway. And, yeah, and the lyrics, come on, you know.
Well, everybody needs to buy this album because, you know, I told Tom Rush this. There's nothing like a lone performer up on stage with a guitar and a story. And that, you know, that's true. You know, to me, I respect that more than any band, you know, that a lone guitar player can just, you know, pick up a guitar and do whatever. You know, it's incredible.
Well, speaking of that guy, Tom Rush is certainly that guy, too.
He is. Yep. I've had him on a couple of times.
I love Tom. He's awesome. But, yeah, I mean, like, you know, people, you know, for the most part, I'm able to do a lot of different stuff, you know, musically. But really, when I'm doing just my quote-unquote own thing, I'm a storyteller. That's the deal.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Real quick, I know we got just a few more minutes here.
Sure, man.
Altamont.
Oh, yeah.
What was your impression about that? I know the story.
Oh, boy.
I mean, there was a guy that was a little crazy that was trying to get to the Stones, right? And I guess he was all drugged out, and he had a gun, right?
He did have a gun. Well, one of the funny things, you know, back in the day, back in the 60s and stuff like that, California is like the Wild West.
Right.
All the people that became the local guys that became, everybody carried to have guns. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just the deal, you know? Not that everybody got shot or anything like that all the time. It was just part of the whole Western thing, you know?
Right.
But anyhow, yeah, so, I guess, you know, we've talked about the Altamont thing a lot, and I guess for me, there's a lot of opinions, and again, I'll just say this is my opinion, not an authority on this kind of stuff. The whole thing was ill thought out on so many levels.
Right.
And you know, if you've ever been, Altamont is like a wind generator farm now. That's the only thing it should have ever been. It was horrible on so many levels. The stage, I doubt the stage was like 2 feet high.
Hmm.
And, you know, in terms of, you know, obviously what happened was a tragedy. But, you know, when you're doing something free, there's this self-entitled mob mentality
sure.
that crowds get.
Yep.
You know, and so I think the audience needs to take some responsibility for that, as well as all of us. I mean, the Jefferson Airplane wasn't part of the production team,
uh-huh.
but we said yes to doing it. So, and there's plenty of blame to spread around, you know. But it was just one of those perfect storms of a bad day.
Right, right. Grace Slick said she had a bad feeling all day, I think, right?
Well, I think as soon as we got there, we all had a bad feeling.
Yeah.
You know, hindsight's 20/20. It's like, yeah, I should have split.
Yeah.
And well, I could have, should have done a lot of things, but we didn't, and that was that.
Yeah, the other thing is the general admission concerts. That didn't work out too well either. You know?
Like I said, on every possible level,
yeah,
it was a bad day.
Yeah. Real quick, just a couple of words. I'm going to name some artists and your first impression, okay?
Sure.
Jimi Hendrix.
Wow. You know, so, you know, Jack, because Jack did some recording with Jimmy, Jack uh-huh. actually knew him better than me, but I remember when we went to, the first time I heard Jimmy was at Monterey, and I'd never heard any of the, I hadn't heard him at all, but I'd heard that it was going to be unlike anything that had experienced up to that time. Now, there's been a lot of guitar stuff under the bridge since the first time that I heard Jimi Hendrix. But I'll tell you, the first time I heard him, it was like, holy shit. Now, it was just like, no, never seen anything like that. Now, in the blues world, this is just a rough analogy for me. Jimmy's kind of like Robert Johnson, and the Reverend Davis was kind of like Eric Clapton. What I
right.
mean by that is the Reverend stuff and Eric stuff was more organized in a way that I could understand. When I first heard Robert Johnson stuff, when John Hammond played it for me with some tapes before the album was released, I thought, this is cool, but I'll never get it. That's not me. You know, Jimmy had that different kind of wild abandon. You know, I couldn't
right.
play like that if my life depended on it. But think of all the doors that he's opened for guitar players
oh,
along
yeah.
the way.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, he was a really heavy cat.
Yep.
And having listened to a lot of his stuff, not just the recordings, because he was such a great producer, too,
mm-hmm.
but so I've heard, like, word outtakes and him working stuff out on the acoustic guitar and stuff. He was a very sophisticated artist, which I was unaware of at the time on that level, because I only saw his show. And to me, there was so much more to him as an artist than just the show. The show was great, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he was a deep cat.
Yeah, imagine if he was alive today, well, all the music he would have been into, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we have no idea where he could have gone. The sky would have been the limit, absolutely.
So I could see him doing fusion, some jazz, a little bit of everything,
totally.
Really. Yeah.
Totally. Now, before we move on to your next artist, one of the things, I was working in Nashville, working with Jim Lauderdale, trying to write some songs together,
mm-hmm.
and they had an exhibit down at the Country Music Hall of Fame called The Night Train to Nashville. It was about rhythm and blues groups,
black
rhythm and blues groups in Nashville back in the 50s, or 60s, I forget what year it was. But in any case, they had this one group, it was like a suit band, and Jimmy was in the band, and he was playing a Rickenbacker 360,
uh-huh.
and guess what? He sounded just like Jimmy.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he was one of a kind. Definitely one of a kind.
Yes, he was. Yes,
yeah.
he was. Absolutely.
All right, Janis Joplin.
Wow. So I met, Janice was one of the first people I met in the Bay Area when I moved there.
Uh-huh.
And I got a chance to back her whenever she would come down the peninsula. But people go, oh, you played with Janice. I mean, it's not like we were, you know, like a working team, but I was often her go-to guy when she came down the peninsula. The first time I heard Janice, I knew I was in the presence of greatness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was such a huge traditional blues fan and stuff like that, and you hear people do this and that. I had never heard somebody of my generation that was that good.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And again, you know, her dying so young, who knows what could have happened.
Exactly. Exactly. I promote Beth Hart a lot. I love her also for nowadays. She's incredible. I mean,
I mean, the future's safer than anything. You know, there's a lot of incredible people out there, and I totally agree with you on Beth Hart. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that back in that era, actually, in terms of what we get to listen to today, it's a rich landscape of artists, you know. Because we get to hear a lot more because of just the way things are these days. You know, but anyway, when I first heard Janice, I'd never heard anybody like her before that was alive.
All right, here's a guy that's from our area. Went to high school, I believe, in Virginia. Jim Morrison.
Right. So the Doors and us were the same agency. When the first Doors album came out and when Surreal Sync Pill was out. Both of our records were at the top of the charts for 2 years, and so we toured a lot together. You know, and I got a chance to sit to be a fly on the wall in some of the Doors sessions. So anyhow, I'm not sure anybody was I wasn't one of Jim's buddies, and I don't think we ever really talked, although he was always really nice to me. He's one of these guys, I mean, you know, the Doors, what was his name, the Crawdaddy, guy did Crawdaddy, Paul, I can't think of his last name now, he's passed away, he's a journalist. Anyway, and when we went to Monterey, he said, when you hear the Doors, it's the most innovative band you've ever heard, you've never heard anything like it. And the first time I did, I totally agree. So what they did, I mean, it was just like, it was, for me, it was such infectious music, but it was so, just so different.
Yep.
And Morrison, you know, obviously a fantastic writer, you know, a great performer. Mm-hmm. Again, I never related to him, you know, in a conversational way, because it just wasn't like that.
Right.
But, I mean, again, another guy that died so young, who knows what would have happened.
The Crawdaddy guy was Paul Williams.
Paul Williams, that's right.
Last one, one of my kind of heroes, because he, you know, was a great promoter, brought a lot of great music to us, is Bill Graham.
Sure, you know, Bill, as irascible and dictatorial as he could be, he was the musician's friend. There's no question about it.
Uh-huh.
Could it be a pain in the ass sometimes? Absolutely. He was our manager briefly and all this kind of stuff. But
right. He
made things happen. And he had the greatest of respect for all different kinds of music. And his goal, when he put shows on, because I used to live almost next door to the Fillmore, so I hung out around him a lot.
Right.
Was just to bring the best, most diverse possible entertainment to the public.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure today that an audience, I was thinking of a show that we did one time where the Russian poet Yevtushenko opened the show,
right.
Lawrence Ferlinghetti read the English translations. I think it might have been Charles Lloyd, one of the local jazz guys on the show on Jefferson Airplane.
Right.
I mean, most audiences just couldn't take that much diversity in art today.
No, I agree.
But
with
he
you.
Just put on these great shows, and every show was a great show. He gave away, you know, he gave away the apples, the posters. I mean, all the stuff. I mean, it was a great loss when he passed away. It really was.
Yeah, such strange circumstances with helicopters. You know, him and Stevie Ray Vaughan, and now the basketball player.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah, Kobe Bryant. Yeah,
yeah. I mean,
well. It really makes me not want to fly in a helicopter.
Yeah, me too.
That.
Exactly.
well, they're not supposed to fly, you know.
Yeah. Man was not made to fly. We would have wings.
It's tragic. I mean, I don't even know what to say. Yeah, I agree. It's horrible.
Norman, here's your last question. And I get some very interesting answers from this. I asked Paul the same question. He said, I'm having one of those senior moments.
I understand. Take your time.
He said, the king of folk, what's his name?
Pete Seeger.
Yeah, he said Pete Seeger and his band, his group.
The Weavers.
The Weavers, yeah, that's what he said. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Wow, that's a really good question. There's so many great ones. Yeah, Pete Seeger, that's a good choice for Paul.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
Well, let me see. You know, I've never sat down to play with Eric Clapton, and I would love to do that sometime.
Mm-hmm. And it's never too late.
No, it isn't.
Nope.
He's married to a gal from Ohio. They own a piece of property up north of Columbus, but maybe I'd get him to come down to Ranch sometime.
Why not?
I really love his work, and I would love to play with him sometime.
I think that'd be awesome, you know?
Yeah, man.
You're doing an electric album, Hot Tuna, and he can be a guest artist, you know?
Yeah, what a guest artist, huh?
That would be perfect. Yeah, you know, I put Jack Bruce on. I asked him who is the better blues guitar player, Jimi Hendrix or Clapton? Of course, you know his alliance was with Eric Clapton.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question, but in my opinion, it's apples and oranges, really.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, like I said, I can understand where Eric was coming from much better than I could understand where Jimmy was coming from.
Right.
You know, in some respects, as innovative as Eric was, and he was, and probably still is, I don't know, I haven't heard him play in a long time, mm-hmm. but Jimmy was from another galaxy.
He was. He certainly
Eric was.
Eric
was from another planet. Jimmy was from another galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss Jimmy. He was incredible. He was really, really
was.
Incredible. Yorma, thank you so much, man. This has been great. For being on the show today.
It's great talking to you. We'll be out in the air one of these days and get a chance to say hello to each other in person. And for if some reason you're ever coming through Southeast Ohio, you got my phone number, obviously. Give me a call or a text. And if I'm home, I'll show you around.
Oh, I'd love it, man. I'd love for you to give me some lessons. That'd be great.
I'd be happy to share with you whatever I got.
That'd be awesome. Thank you so much, Yorma. I'm in the Florida area now, but, you know, next time you come with Hot Tuna, go electric.
Yeah, we probably, it's in the wings, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man.
Well, man.
Stay
Thanks,
safe.
Brother.
All right. Bye-bye
Have
now.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Purchase Yorma's latest solo recording called 8 In No Hurry on Red House Records. It has received wonderful critical acclaim. I gave it 5 stars. You can buy that at Amazon.com. Excuse me. Purchase also Yorma's memoirs, Been So Long, My Life and Music, also at Amazon.com. And for more information about Yorma Kokkonen and Hot Tuna, visit www.yormakokkonen.com, www.facebook.com/groups, Yorma Kokkonen, www.hottuna.com. Also, you can visit www.jeffersonairplane.com. Don't forget to visit the Fur Peace Ranch at www.furpeaceranch.com. They are also on Facebook. And also on YouTube, www.youtube.com/user/FurPeaceRanch. Also, Yorma blogs consistently, Cracks in the Finish, and that's at www.yormakokkonen.com, Cracks in the Fish in the Finish. Also, a very special thanks to Cash Edwards Music Services for arranging this interview with Yorma Kokkonen and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast. I think I did say that about Yorma's memoirs, Been So Long, My Life and Music, at Amazon.com. Great book, great read. Just came out, I believe, last year. Again, very special thanks to Cash Edwards Music Services for arranging this interview. Also, my new book is finally out. It's entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1. It chronicles truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us all free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. Everyone stay safe, stay healthy, have a great week.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on PBS Radio, Station 1.